Welcome to the Weekly Wisdom Podcast with your host, John Sampson. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Sponsors. Or is it your reputation that's bothering you? But look at how soon we're all forgotten. The abyss of endless time that swallows it all. The emptiness of all those applauding hands. The people who praise us, how capricious they are, how arbitrary. This is a quote from Stoic philosopher and Roman emperor Marcus Aurelius in his Meditations. Our topic today is seeking external praise, and in particular, praise from those we don't know. We've all done this, right? As children, then teenagers, and later as adults. The object from whom we desire this praise and validation changes over time, but the need is always there. As a kid, it's your parents. As a teenager, it's other teenagers, particularly those you think are cool or attractive. And as an adult, it's your boss, your coworkers, or that cute guy or girl. As we'll discuss, though, at some point this need can become too strong, or becomes a problem and is no longer a healthy part of our development and our relationship with the world. Now, this topic has gotten a lot of play in the last 5 to 10 years, but this is not a new problem. And despite the focus of the last decade, it wasn't created by social media. However, as we'll discuss, social media can certainly exacerbate the problem. Instead, though, this is actually a question that occupied the minds of some of history's most brilliant thinkers thousands of years ago, and there are deep evolutionary and neurological drivers behind the need for external validation and praise. This desire is considered a fundamental psychological need for people, which seems pretty logical, right? We need to fit in with others to be an accepted member of the group and benefit from that connectedness. The problems arise when this need moves from a moderate level of validation from people close to us that know us to a more extreme reliance on the approval from external sources that we don't know, particularly all those anonymous keyboard warriors out there in the digital world. This shift in the source of our validation, particularly through likes, views, and shares, can have significant impacts on our psychological health and can lead to anxiety, depression, and the destruction of our own self-worth. Now, let's quickly clarify what we mean by external validation or external praise, which is the active pursuit of approval, praise, and recognition from sources other than ourselves. It's pretty normal and even healthy to seek this praise from our close social circles and our families. And this is actually an important part of healthy social interaction. It gives us reassurance, and it lets us know that we belong and that our actions are viewed favorably by our social circle. Any of you who have ever taken a psychology course will remember Maslow's hierarchy of needs. As he describes, once our physiological and safety needs are met, we move into belonging and esteem needs. This leads us to seek friendship, acceptance, social connection, and respect and recognition from others. You can see how this is beneficial from a societal point of view and in the natural evolution of our social interactions. Imagine for a second a group of people trying to live cohesively in a community or together in a family that didn't care at all what other people thought of them or their actions. It'd be much harder for that community to grow and thrive, because there would be little motivation to help each other and treat each other with respect. As we now know, this external validation is neurologically reinforced through the release of dopamine. And dopamine has gotten a lot of attention in recent years, and as you likely know, is a neurotransmitter in the brain's reward center, and this release gives us a temporary sensation of happiness and pleasure, which then chemically reinforces and conditions us to seek out more of the same behavior that led to the original reward. So we have developed evolutionarily to seek external praise, seemingly for the societal benefits mentioned before. Now, it's important to note, though, that the release of dopamine is also a key factor in driving the addictive behavior as we seek out more of this chemical release. Given that it seems ingrained in us, it makes sense that this behavior begins from the earliest stages of life. If you've ever been around babies, toddlers, and young children, I'm sure you can picture moments where they do some action and then look to see a reaction from their parent. When this reaction is positive, they repeat the behavior, looking for the same reaction. And this helps us learn appropriate behaviors and how to conduct ourselves around others. However, it's important to note that if we become overly reliant on the opinions of others, particularly those we don't know, we can develop a state where our entire sense of self is driven by these other opinions rather than who we and those closest to us know us to be. So while this need is something that is natural and has developed through evolution, the recent rise of technology and particularly social media has moved much faster than evolution could ever match, which creates a challenge for how we as a society deal with the current reality and this new way of receiving validation, where our desire to seek approval has become amplified. The quantifiable metrics associated with social media, the likes, shares, comments, and followers, has created a feedback loop where our own self-esteem can be tied to these metrics. Studies have shown that we get dopamine hits from these very metrics, and they are seen as signs of our standing within society. Those studies also show a positive correlation between the number of likes and a person's reported self-worth. Unfortunately, this creates a situation where someone's value is not inherent or based on their quality of character, but instead on their ability to perform for an audience and get positive feedback. Now think how this compares to how you judge someone's worth that you actually know. You don't value them based on their performances, but based on who they are and their consistent actions that more accurately show their character. And we now know that when we don't get enough validation through these social media metrics, it can lead to profound feelings of rejection, which is a threat to our needs of belonging and acceptance. At the same time, though, we know that validation from a large, unknown group or audience is much less stable and superficial compared to that same validation from those with whom we have meaningful relationships. The consequences of this excessive dependence on external validation, particularly from the unknown masses, can lead to meaningful psychological problems. The happiness we experience from the dopamine that's released is fleeting and it fades quickly, leading us to become dependent on similar reactions as we seek that next hit. This isn't too dissimilar to what happens with drug addicts, and anxiety problems can be created as a result of the uncertainty and inconsistency of that dopamine hit. Our own self-worth then can become unstable based on the perceived successes or failures related to this inconsistency. It prevents us from developing our own strong sense of self, and that instability in our self-worth creates a cycle of insecurity and leaves us vulnerable to various disorders like depression. One of my favorite phrases to always keep in mind is that we have to accept our reality and move forward from here. Since we're not going to go back in time and remove social media, and since the problem of over-reliance on external validation is one that is thousands of years old and only exacerbated by social media, the question is, how can we arm ourselves mentally to be able to handle these pressures and protect our psyche? And I think we can find many of those answers in the teachings of some of history's most capable thinkers, whose knowledge transcends time and technology. While some of the specific teachings of these philosophical schools differ, you'll notice that there are some key similarities that can provide us with real, practical ways of addressing this issue of external validation. And not surprisingly, the answers are found within. Plato believed that there are two primary modes of cognition, knowledge and opinion of or belief. He described opinion as inherently unstable and unreliable. Since it doesn't have a foundation in evidence or reasoning, it requires no accountability or understanding, which is why it can spread so quickly to become widespread public opinion. Now think about society today and how true this is, how viral certain statements can become, and how easily public opinion can be swayed. Plato describes the opinion of someone who does not have knowledge as fundamentally worthless. For example, he says, "Just as it would be madness to settle on medical treatment for the body of a person by taking an opinion poll of the neighbors, so it is irrational to prescribe for the body politic by polling the opinions of the people at large." So he's delineating between the opinions of the masses and the opinions of people who have knowledge about a subject and therefore may have something useful to add with their opinions. Plato goes on to criticize those who deliberately appeal to the masses. He says, "I might compare them to a man who should study the tempers and desires of a mighty strong beast who is fed by them. He would learn how to approach and handle them. Also, at what times and from what causes he is dangerous, or the reverse. And what is the meaning of his several cries? And by what sounds, when another utters them, he is soothed or infuriated? And you may suppose further that when, by continually attending upon him, he has become perfect in all this, he calls his knowledge wisdom, and makes of it a system or art, which he proceeds to teach, although he has no real notion of what he means by the principles or passions of which he is speaking, but calls this honorable and that dishonorable, or good or evil, or just or unjust, all in accordance with the tastes and tempers of the great beast. And in what way does he who thinks that wisdom is the discernment of the tempers and tastes of the motley multitude, whether in painting or music, or finally in politics, differ from him whom I have been describing? For when a man consorts with the many and exhibits to them his poem or other work of art or the service which he has done the state, making them his judges when he is not obliged, the so-called necessity of Diomede will oblige him to produce whatever they praise. This section goes beyond just the discounting of public opinion due to their lack of knowledge, but talks about a loss of one's sense of self. If you become so consumed with what will please the masses, then ultimately, they will be the drivers of what you create, not you. If you produce something creative, you're driven to do that by some inner drive. But if you're just trying to produce something that appeals to the masses and sells the most, your work is destined to be shallow and unfulfilling. But perhaps Plato's most famous way of addressing this issue is through the allegory of the cave, which is a metaphor for illusory opinions. In the allegory, he describes prisoners who have been chained in a cave since birth and are facing a wall. Behind them, a fire burns, and people and other objects cast shadows on the wall, which then become the only reality that these prisoners ever know. Their wisdom, then, is based on predicting what shadow would be seen next. These shadows represent opinion that they mistake for reality, and the prisoners, by extension, represent humanity. When one of the prisoners is able to leave the cave and see reality or become enlightened and then returns, his eyes take time to adjust and he is mocked for his inability to interpret the shadows, with the other prisoners saying that his eyes have been ruined. This prisoner now feels pity for the other prisoners and their foolish honors that they give to each other. The takeaway for our purpose today is that for us to ground our self-worth in the opinions of others is to build a life on the foundations of fleeting, changeable, and ultimately false shadows. That the person who values the opinion of the crowd is no different from the prisoner who values their ability to falsely interpret the shadows on the wall. That faceless crowd is likely just as ignorant of our own character or of the specific art form that they seek to judge. Pardon the interruption. We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
In his work, Nicomachean Ethics, Aristotle discusses praise in the form of a discussion of honor in terms of honor received from others as he searches for the ultimate good that people should be seeking. He says, a consideration of the prominent types of life shows that people of superior refinement and of active disposition identify happiness with honor, for this is, roughly speaking, the end of the political life. But it seems too superficial to be what we're looking for, since it is thought to depend on those who bestow honor rather than on him who receives it. But the good we divine to be something proper to a man and not easily taken from him. Further, men seem to pursue honor in order that they may be assured of their goodness. At least it is by men of practical wisdom that they seek to be honored and among those who know him, and on the ground of their virtue. Clearly then, according to them at any rate, virtue is better. So to unpack what he's saying here, he starts by saying how honor, which we can take to mean praise in this sense, is something that many men seek, but that praise is given to him by someone else and can be just as easily taken away as it is given. He then hits at a point we've touched on previously, which is that those who are wise at least seek that praise from people who know them and seek it based on their virtue or character rather than more superficial reasons. He also says, now each man judges well the things he knows, and of these he is a good judge. This furthers the point about seeking validation from those who know, whether they know us or know our subject, rather than from the uninformed. From Aristotle's point of view, it's not that we should shun praise, but that we should only accept it if it reflects something real, and that it should be based on our own virtues or reflect the excellence of our work. We need to focus on being worthy of praise rather than on seeking praise. Now, Seneca was a Stoic, and the Stoics gave us some of the most straightforward and practical advice, particularly Seneca, whose most famous surviving writings come in the form of letters to his younger friend Lucilius, where he provides guidance on how one should live. In one letter, where Seneca is discussing crowds and their potentially bad influences, he cites others. "One man means as much to me as a multitude, and a multitude only as much as one man." He then says, "They asked him what was the object of all this study, applied to an art that would reach but very few. He replied, 'I am content with few, content with one, content with none at all.'" The third saying is by Epicurus, "I write this not for the many, but for you. Each of us is enough of an audience for the other. Lay these words to heart, Lucilius, that you may scorn the pleasure which comes from the applause of the majority. Many men praise you, but have you any reason for being pleased with yourself if you are the person whom the many can understand? Your good qualities should face inwards. Farewell." Seneca touches on a number of items with these quotes and with his final statement. First, that in any pursuit, we should be pursuing it for the right reasons, because we have something to say, some knowledge we want to learn, some character trait that we want to further develop. If that provides us with an audience that is small or even no audience at all which appreciates our work, then so be it. Our own development should be enough. In his statement on being pleased by applause from the many, he's referring to his belief that those who are the most virtuous and knowledgeable couldn't possibly be fully understood by the ignorant many. He ends the letter by imploring his friend to focus inwards on his own self-worth rather than on external validation. He dives further into this sentiment in a later letter, first quoting from Epicurus again, "I have never wished to cater to the crowd, for what I know, they do not approve, and what they approve, I do not know." He then states, "For who that is pleased by virtue can please a crowd? It takes trickery to win popular approval, and you must make yourself like unto them. They will withhold their approval if they do not recognize you as one of themselves. However, what you think of yourself is much more to the point than what others think of you. The favor of ignoble men can be won only by ignoble means. Assuredly, it will make you prefer to please yourself rather than the populace. It will make you wait and not merely count men's judgments. It will make you live without fear of gods or men. It will make you either overcome evils or end them. Otherwise, if I see you applauded by popular acclamation, if your entrance upon the scene is greeted by a roar of cheering and clapping, marks of distinction meant only for actors, if the whole state, even the women and children, sing your praises, how can I help pitying you? For I know what pathway leads to such popularity. Farewell." Seneca again touches on the similar themes we've been discussing of the need to discount the approval of people you don't know and who are likely ignorant of the things for which you're seeking approval. So how could you possibly be too pleased or saddened by their approval or disapproval? In today's context, you can substitute applause and cheering for likes and followers as it relates to social media, or sales in terms of books or arts. Marcus Aurelius, another Stoic philosopher and a Roman emperor, whose quote on reputation I cited at the beginning of our discussion, touches on these similar themes elsewhere in his Meditations. He says, "People who are excited by posthumous fame forget that the people who remember them will soon die too, and those after them in turn, until their memory, passed from one to another like a candle flame, gutters and goes out. But suppose that those who remembered you were immortal and your memory undying. What good would it do you? And I don't just mean when you're dead, but in your own lifetime. What use is praise, except to make your lifestyle a little more comfortable? You're out of step, neglecting the gifts of nature to hang on someone's words in the future." These meditations were directed at himself, and he was blunt and to the point. Why spend so much of our lives consumed with what others think of us that we don't pursue what it is that we are meant to pursue, that which brings us true joy and satisfaction? In another meditation, he states, "What is it in ourselves that we should prize? An audience clapping? No. No more than the clacking of their tongues, which is all that public praise amounts to, a clacking of tongues. So we throw out other people's recognition. What's left for us to prize? I think it's this, to do and not do what we were designed to for. That's the goal of all trades, all arts, and what each of them aims at. That the thing they create should do what it was designed to do. The nurseryman who cares for the vines, the horse trainer, the dog breeder, this is what they aim at. And teaching and education, what else are they trying to accomplish? So that's what we should prize. Hold on to that, and you won't be tempted to aim at anything else. And if you can't stop prizing a lot of those other things, then you'll never be free. Free, independent, imperturbable. Because you'll always be envious and jealous, afraid that people might come and take it all away from you, plotting against those who have them, those things you prize. People who need those things are bound to be a mess and bound to take out their frustration on the gods. Whereas to respect your own mind, to prize it, will leave you satisfied with your own self, well integrated into your community and in tune with the gods as well, embracing what they allot you and what they ordain." He really gets into some of the themes of modern psychology here. First, like many of the other philosophical texts we've discussed, he dismisses the importance of public praise, likening it to the clacking of tongues. But then he goes deeper and touches on why it's important to cultivate the inner self rather than focusing so much on the external. He even seems to recognize the psychological consequences of focusing externally rather than internally, and how this can become pathological, leading to increased anxiety and depression, as one can never seem to find satisfaction. There are several other passages and meditations that seem to help him to better understand why he should not care about external praise. Look at who they really are, the people whose approval you long for, and what their minds are really like. Then you won't blame the ones who make mistakes they can't help, and you won't feel a need for their approval. You will have seen the sources of both, their judgments and their actions. You want praise from people who kick themselves every 15 minutes? The approval of people who despise themselves? What their minds are like, what they work at, what evokes their love or admiration? Imagine their souls stripped bare and their vanity, to suppose that their disdain could harm anyone or their praise help them. In these passages, he's engaging in something called cognitive restructuring and reframing his desire for their approval in a way that helps him to put aside and remind himself that he needs to focus inward. As I mentioned, both Seneca and Marcus Aurelius were Stoics, and one of the core tenets of Stoicism is the idea of the dichotomy of control, which says that things in life fall into two buckets, those that are within our control and those that are not. Other people's opinions fall squarely in the bucket of things that are outside our control. So for us to focus on those opinions is to subject ourselves to these external and unpredictable forces, which is completely irrational. And you see this come through in their discussion on the topic. Now, across these different philosophical schools, we can see that the single unifying answer to the problem of external validation is the prioritization of our own internal character and virtue over external acclaim. Whether it's through the guidance of the Stoics, Plato, Aristotle, or others, the message is the same. The opinions of others are at best fleeting and many times based on ignorance. It is only those who know us and our character who can most effectively provide the validation that we need. Modern psychology supports the sentiments of these ancient philosophers, and the strategies suggested by psychologists for overcoming a dependence on external validation center around building that strong inner sense of self. Self-awareness and reflection is one, and involves recognizing triggers and causes so that you can establish better protocols for handling yourself. For example, if you find yourself constantly checking how many likes your last post received, try setting boundaries for yourself in terms of how often you're allowed to look at your social media account, and try to get yourself to a point where you don't feel the need to look at the numbers. Cognitive restructuring involves challenging and trying to replace negative thought patterns, asking questions like, is this thought really true? This is what Marcus Aurelius was doing when he wrote Meditations to himself about how fickle the crowd is, and how little he should ultimately care about their approval, and how Seneca advised his friend. Each of the other philosophers also touch on this in their guidance, that we should only care for the opinions of those who know us and are experts in the field in which we are practicing, because only they can serve as useful judges. Self-compassion suggests that we try to talk to ourselves as if we would talk to a friend. This is an excellent way to provide yourself with some perspective. Think if a friend was feeling down because their last post didn't garner much attention or it received negative attention, or if their follower count was low relative to others. What would you say to them? Should they care? Or should they instead recognize that they are valued by the people who actually know them? Recent neurological studies have shown that because of our brain's neuroplasticity, deliberately practicing self-compassion can reshape the brain's response patterns to the point that when we acknowledge our own achievements, our brains release the same neurochemicals that are triggered by external praise. Another strategy is to focus on pursuing intrinsic goals, to ground your self-worth in personal values and passions. Shift your focus from the superficial metrics to your craft. Are you getting better at whatever it is you're producing? Thinking about what it is that you're putting out there that's generating likes and followers, and making sure that it is something that you are passionate about, regardless of success in the eyes of others. Why are you writing that book or creating that online content or giving that speech? Is it purely to get likes and followers and sales? If so, psychologists and philosophers alike would tell you that you're doing it for the wrong reasons. Find something to write about or content to create that you're passionate about, and work to get better at it over time. Then recognize and acknowledge yourself when you do. Praise and validation will come as you continue to get better. But even then, don't worry about the praise from the ignorant masses, but from those who know you and your craft and weigh their opinions judiciously. For example, if you just decided to launch a new podcast about the intersection of modern psychology and ancient philosophy to address practical issues that we all face today, you should do it because it is meaningful to you to do so. I would love for this podcast to do well, but if it doesn't, if it only reaches a few, or if it reaches none, then as Seneca suggested, that will be enough for me. At the end of the day, the value that I get from researching these ancient texts and modern studies makes me a better person. And that is enough. Until next time, thank you for listening, and make sure you subscribe.